Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Buddy, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can reach us every day through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Morning, Mark.
Morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing okay. I got to tell you, though.
Yeah?
And I handed you this article a couple days ago, but...
Yep.
A little peculiar the way the world runs today, I think.
Because we're scooping people?
No, not just scooping people. I'm reading the Star Ledger, which is the biggest paper in New Jersey. And, of course, I get through my front page of who Anna Nicole's, Danny Lynn's father really
who cares?
Is.
It's a big who cares for me.
Who cares?
Okay, and I write about food, okay? You know I mean? The recipe for pasta, much more important to me than Anna Nicole.
Anyway, so I get all the way through all that stuff. I get to page 17, and I see the headline. Chemical found in water supplies.
Yeah, you want me to read that headline? Star Ledger, Dateline, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day. Low levels of a likely carcinogenic chemical used to make nonstick cookware and all-weather clothing have been found in drinking water systems across New Jersey, according to tests conducted by the State Department of Environmental Protection. This is consistent with what has recently been found around the rest of the country. The New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection tested 23 drinking water systems in 17 counties. 78% of them tested positive for PFOAs. You may recall, or if you don't recall, you can go to our website and look at the show where we did on Teflon. And PFOAs are what's released from Teflon. And your muffins don't stick, but you get cancer. Sorry.
And surprise, surprise, it's in the waterways now.
What do you know?
Okay.
What they found here's one of the things that alarmed us. We see this stuff we read the food press. And what the Teflon companies were coming out with is they said, okay, the Teflon companies say some of the consumer groups are saying when a Teflon pan hits 250 or 300 degrees, it starts to release a poisonous gas. Okay, forget the carcinogens. Poisonous gas that will kill you right then.
Poisonous gas that if you have a parakeet or a parrot or
wait, let me get there.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, so the Teflon companies say, no, 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 it doesn't release the poisonous gas until 500 degrees. So what? What are we doing? Right? Okay. And so what they recommended, though, was what Mark was just saying, is that if you have a bird, don't keep it in the kitchen while you're cooking with Teflon.
Or you'll kill it.
Anybody remember?
Or it will die.
Anybody remember the coal miners? When the canary goes, everybody get out of the mine.
Run.
Throw the Teflon pans out the window.
So you know what I want to do? I want to keep my canary in my kitchen.
Right, right, right.
So I know when it's time to turn the pan down.
Or to run away.
That was too hot. I guess I should turn the pan
down. Turkey's
well
done and the canary's dead.
Well, the other thing here is, you have all, people in the food business saying, oh, you need really high heat in order to get that really nice sear on the outside of whatever you're cooking. Really high heat. You got to get your pans up to 400 or 500 degrees to get that nice sear.
So that's one thing that's a problem. The other thing is there are things that are likely carcinogens. PFOAs are likely carcinogens that are held within Teflon. Well, guess what? If you throw that Teflon pan in the garbage, mm-hmm. it goes out to a garbage truck. The garbage truck takes it to a dump. They put all the Teflon pans in the dump, and what they're finding is that the PFOAs are in the drinking water next to the dumps.
Shocking.
I love it. Tracy Carluccio, who works for an organization called the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, which is a great organization that watches the environmental condition all along the Delaware in three states, she said, PFOAs, not surprisingly, are slick and can travel quickly when they enter the groundwater. They're nonstick. They go, it's nonstick, goes right in. And so anywhere where the products are left, it gets into the
You know what I don't understand? And this is what I don't understand about the world we live in today. Okay. So last year, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency asked 8 manufacturers to stop producing PFOAs by 2015.
Great.
But by 2015... By 2015,
it's only the water you drink in the
that's
air.
That's 9 years more. Okay, carcinogen, it's in the drinking water. It's in your drinking water. Yes, our drinking water is being treated before we drink it. So we're not, there's what they say is we're not getting the PFOAs. They're being filtered out before they actually get into our drinking water.
What about the fish?
What about the deer?
What about the plants?
What about everything you eat?
Yeah.
Comes from the ground. Okay, I am Mr. Free Trade, Mr. It's okay to you got to let business go and you got to let business do its thing unless you're releasing toxins into the earth. Then you have to stop, and not by 2015. You need to stop today.
So be careful for yourself with your Teflon pans, and don't let them get too hot. And I would say keep that canary right in the kitchen.
I agree.
And if the canary goes down, get out.
Once.
And you can find this article. We'll link to it in the Star Ledger, February 14th, Dateline. We'll link to you at restaurantguysradio.com. Here's a philosophical question for you, Mark. What is quote-unquote, real Kraft cheese? Is it real cheese, or is it really from Kraft?
I think it's really from Kraft.
Yeah, that's
sorry
exactly,
to tell you.
That's exactly right. The list of ingredients on the back shows that Easy Cheese, or real Kraft cheese, contains, well, no cheese.
But it's easy.
Yeah, that's true. And it's got a lot of easy, but not a lot of cheese. The Kraft company...
Can I please have a little extra cheese and a little less easy, please?
Food companies are only as honest as labeling laws force them to be, and Kraft has been sued twice for putting misleading claims on product labels. And in both cases, they agreed to change the labeling. One of them was when they had to take the all-natural label off of the 7-Up. You know, I think if you believed it when you read it, you have a problem. So, because when you read all natural on the front and then the back, you read high fructose corn syrup, it's not all.
Things like Breyers, you now have to make sure you go to the all natural Breyers ice cream when you're picking your Breyers, because other versions of Breyers are not, you know, just sugar and cream and, you know, basic ingredients.
You know, 3 out of 8 people have said that they would switch to or have switched to all natural brands. These are macaroni and cheese buyers, hardcore, like one level above the Pop-Tart buyer, you know.
Hey now, you don't have 4 children. It is abundantly clear that you do not have 4 children.
It's a fact. I'm happier as a result. But the organic real cheese macaroni and cheese mm-hmm. costs $2.17 a box as opposed to Kraft's 89 cents a box.
Yeah, can I tell you though what I do with my kids when I buy them, because I do buy them. That's exactly what I buy them. The Annie's or whatever the other versions of these are. Like, this doesn't taste as good as the other one. You know what I say to them?
What?
Shut up and eat it.
Enlightened culinarian. When we come back, we're going to be talking with one of our favorite writers about food and wine, and especially about Italy, a guy named Fred Plotkin, and he's a very interesting fellow. We're going to be talking about food and wine, and he might talk a little bit about opera, because he's an expert on that, and we don't know a damn thing about it.
But so, he probably won't talk about macaroni and cheese.
We'll be back in just a moment with Fred Plotkin on The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with The Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And our guest today is Fred Plotkin. Fred divides his time between New York and the Italian Riviera. He's an author and an expert on all things Italian, especially food and opera. He's the author of Italy for the Gourmet Traveler, Italy Today, the beautiful cookbook that he wrote with Lorenzo de' Medici, the Authentic Pasta Book, and Opera 101, A Complete Guide to Learning and Loving Opera. He's written for the New York Times, Los Angeles Times, and he also writes in Italian, and he lives in both New York City and in Italy.
Fred Plotkin, welcome to the show.
Buongiorno.
Hey, buongiorno, man.
Now, macaroni and cheese.
Yes.
I adore macaroni and cheese, but you have to make it from scratch. It costs less and it tastes better.
These are all true things.
Here's my question. So you don't accept the Kraft's definition of real Kraft cheese. It never comes in an envelope.
No, there's nothing real about real Kraft cheese at all.
I knew that we were kindred spirits, Fred.
Absolutely.
Fred, I love your book, Italy for the Gourmet Traveler, where you talk about many, many, many different cities and towns in Italy. And I think what's interesting about that is is the approach itself. I think that's really the only way to attack Italy, isn't it? One town at a time?
Well, I wouldn't use the word attack because everyone's attacked Italy for centuries.
Especially not Americans.
Right? Problem.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would say that the way to take your fork and to go to Italy is one town at a time, because for people to understand the place, really, it's the size of New Mexico, so not all that big, but it has so many different cities, languages, cultures, cuisines, terrains, and it was not a nation until about 1860.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, we, the United States, are much older as a nation than Italy is.
Right.
But that said, there are ancient cultures there, and you go from one town to the next, and you find legacies that are 1,000 or 2,000 years old, and these legacies include recipes.
Well, let's have you weigh in on a topic. This is very interesting because, I mean, I'm Irish American, Mark's Italian American, and you know, when you're a hyphenated American, I think that hyphenated Americans have a powerful identity, especially in a state like New Jersey. But I think that sometimes people get confused that Italian American is not Italian, like Irish American is not Irish. I mean, I'm going to march in the St. Patrick's Day parade, but I don't talk Irish. You know what I mean?
Correct.
And I think that in New Jersey here, especially, things we own an Italian American restaurant, and that's what we call it, an Italian American restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
But people in America always make this kind of weird distinction between, oh, is it a northern Italian restaurant or a southern Italian restaurant? And that's really just – and, you know, the northern Italian restaurants always seem to have, you know, like lobster ravioli and a cognac cream sauce on them.
What they really want to say is French Italian.
What they want to say is I made it up. My last name ends in a vowel and I made it up. Will you talk about Italian American restaurants or how you see Italian cuisine translated poorly and well in the United States?
Absolutely. Most of the immigrants from Italy who came to the east coast of the United States from Boston to about Baltimore came from southern Italy. And therefore, our view in the northeast of what Italian food is or could be comes from that tradition of the south. Now, almost everybody who got here was very poor. So what happened when they got here is they adapted ingredients and they adapted their lack of income to create dishes that resemble those of home. But you can't have the same kind of mozzarella, so that we have mozzarella that happens to be chewier, denser than the very soft, slightly tangy one they have in southern Italy. In addition, when these people began to make money, what happened was they started putting more and more ingredients into the dishes. So if you go to Naples and have spaghetti with tomato sauce, it's that. It's a light tomato sauce, a small portion of spaghetti, a little drop of cheese, not tons of it, and maybe a leaf of basil and a little bit of olive oil. Here, to compensate for the poverty, when people started making a lot of money, they put in tons of tomatoes, lots of meat, incredible amounts of herbs, gallons of oil, and it turned into a heavy dish. We think of Italian food as healthy as the Mediterranean diet, but here, Italian Americans drop over at the same rate as Irish Americans and Jewish Americans and African Americans because the American diet is so over-rich in things, whereas we don't realize, and this is the key difference, that what Italy has all over us is flavor without weight. And well, here we put weight in our food.
There are a couple of other things that obviously the Italians do that we don't do. And you know, lunches are the big meal as opposed to dinners throughout a lot of Europe.
But that's changing now.
It's changing. They become more like us and they're getting fatter.
Right. As you mentioned, I wrote a book called Italy Today, The Beautiful Cookbook. And the idea of that is how Italians eat now. And I'm not necessarily endorsing all of that. But again, the foundation is flavor. What the Italians do is if they don't sit down for a three-course meal at lunch in the whole country, though they do in Naples and they do in Bologna, they take the flavors of a big meal and telescope them into something smaller. So in Milan, you can have magnificent panini, which in no way resemble our lousy panini that we have in America, in which they may take a beautifully cooked veal cutlet and a couple slices of tomato and a bit of lettuce and put it between two perfectly sliced pieces of bread. And that's a wonderful sandwich where you have the Milanese veal cutlet, but it still tastes like something.
Mm-hmm.
Where we fall apart sometimes, and I'm not knocking food in America because we eat incredibly well, but we pre-make things and disregard the flavor component. In other words, if we cook something 2 hours ahead of time, it'll taste 2 hours old.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In Italy, they cook it for you at the moment, so there's freshness.
You know, the other thing that I think is very interesting is the portion size and our sense of value being about the quantity received, and how that differs across. We're going to come back in just a moment and talk more about this with Fred Plotkin. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Our guest today is Fred Plotkin. We're talking about Italy with Fred. We talked before a little bit about how Italian food differs and Italian-American food differs. And one of the things that I think people find interesting is portion size. We run an Italian-American restaurant, and people view Italian-American restaurants differently than we run a contemporary American restaurant as well. We have to kill people with portions.
Quantity is very important.
I mean, if you don't take stuff home, you feel like you got ripped off. Is that do you see that as well? And is that very different than what's going on in Italy?
Isn't it amazing that every American owns a dog?
Yeah.
They all have somebody that they have to bring the food home to. That's really part of the thinking. And there are certain cuisines in America, Italian-American being one, Chinese another, Mexican a third, where we think in terms of buying two meals when we sit down at a restaurant. And that's the economies of scale in a restaurant, that they often feel it's cheaper to produce a very large portion of pasta and charge somewhat more than to charge, as they might in Italy, $5 and give you a small portion, when that's really all you need. So it's the attitude, not of the restaurateur, but of the client.
Oh, yeah, no, you can never, you're dead in the water, especially in an Italian-American restaurant that says, yeah, it was good, small portions. I had to stop for a hamburger on the way home. Can't let that happen. Right. I got a veal chop, it'll kill you. Okay?
You know, I would love if we put the calorie amounts of every dish that is served in every restaurant on the menu. So when someone sees that those six pieces of manicotti or that gargantuan piece of lasagna that we have as just one course in a meal may have a lot of calories. This is not to say that Italian food is more caloric. It's not, in fact.
But 7 pounds of it is.
7 pounds of anything is. 7 pounds of hamburger is. And if we saw that, you know, this item, whatever it is that we're eating in any restaurant, had 1,200 calories in the dish, we may cut it in half. I mean, I have a habit now when I go out to eat, and I'm overweight. I'm not super overweight, but I do have to watch it. I cut every portion of everything I get in half immediately, and I push half of it to the side of the plate, and I have it wrapped up.
Let me just say,
if I pass a homeless person on the street in New York City where I live, that person gets the other half of the meal, and if not, I take it home and I eat it on my own.
Hey, people are going to start following you around,
exactly.
Fred
Plotkin at the bottom. He's got something good.
Where's
to
Fred eating tonight?
Hey, so a quick question. We have to break for the news. We have important news coming up, but in Italy, the culture is very different. I've never seen anyone take anything home from an Italian restaurant. That would never happen, would it?
It's considered very inelegant. They would never. That's considered very bad manners.
I mean, anywhere in Europe, I've never seen anyone have a doggy bag.
Never, ever.
I took one in Germany recently.
I've seen people bring their dogs into the restaurants, though. That's right.
You feed them right from the table.
All right, we're gonna go listen to some news, and we'll come back talk more with Fred Plotkin about various places in Italy. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Today, we're talking with one of our favorite writers on the subject of Italy, which is, well, one of our favorite subjects. Fred Plotkin divides his time between New York and the Italian Riviera. Lucky dude. His writing concentrates on the subject of Italy, food, and opera. He's the author of Italy for the Gourmet Traveler, Italy Today, The Beautiful Cookbook, which he wrote with Lorenzo de' Medici, The Authentic Pasta Cookbook, and Opera 101.
Fred, you know, there are a couple of major wine conferences that happen in Verona every year that Francis and I have been to a few times. And so we dine out a lot in that area, and, of course, we travel to the outlying areas to eat as much as we can while we're out there. And one of the things that you've noted, and I'd like you to comment on, because I didn't have great dining experience in Venice in the time I was there, and I think that maybe most people don't. Can you talk to us a little bit about
sure.
that?
Now, one thing I should say in this context, too, is that I've entirely updated Italy for the Gourmet Traveler.
Correct.
A new edition comes out in April or May.
Great.
It's available now in England, and you can get it through amazon.co.uk, but be sure not to buy older editions because they don't reflect my current opinion.
Because things have changed in 10 years.
Yes. But I revised it a couple of times in Europe, but it didn't come out in America. But this is entirely new for here. And Venice has improved.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with Venice in the past was that it so geared itself to the tourist traveler in passing that they would serve things like pesto, which is not in any way a Venetian dish. And it was not very good pesto. So people who might have been to Liguria, where pesto was from, would say, well, Ligurian pesto is so much better. Well, yes, indeed so. The Venetians decided that it was important to reclaim their native cuisine and create restaurants or redo menus to offer Venetian dishes. So, in fact, there has been a lot of improvement.
Where are these places? What are the places people should be looking for now when they're in Venice?
Well,
what types of places?
A lot of them are called osterie, and these are little wine bars that tend to do a few dishes only, but they're dishes that are very native to the tradition. So it might be baccalà mantecato, which is sort of a whipped codfish that's served on a toast. it might be fegato alla veneziana, which is Venetian liver. Now, you know, some might say ick, but I have to tell you, I tasted 15 different pieces of liver around Venice to find the ones I like most. There's a place that I like called Antiche Carampane, and they have a big sign outside that says, no pizza, no lasagna, no menu turistico. And they really say that we want to serve you local Venetian food.
That's great.
Wonderful.
Now, one could argue whether Venetian food is the best in Italy anyway. I wouldn't say it is, but let's not forget, we're still in Italy.
Well,
so it's pretty wonderful.
Well, you know,
one of the things I comment to people all the time is, okay, if I go to the airport in Italy, I have better food than I have in lots of other places.
Lots of restaurants in America.
Yeah. Absolutely. The truck stops on the highway.
Well, now, let me ask you to weigh in on a topic that I've done a little painful research on myself. Now, I don't particularly care for horse meat, right?
Right.
And so I have this thing about, you know, I want to especially if I don't like something, I really need to understand all of it so that before I say I don't like something, I always say, you know, I haven't had the right one yet. I haven't found the good. So when last I was in Verona, I found there was a restaurant there. I can't recall the name of it, but it was famous. It was known as and Verona's like one of the horse meat capitals of the world, and this restaurant was like the best restaurant for horse meat in Verona. I went. And I still don't like horse meat. Sure. Can you help me? Or am I done?
I went to college in Italy, and my first years were in Bologna. And I was on a student budget, and I found one butcher where the meat was always cheaper than all the others, and I never knew why, but it was very red and very sweet. And I didn't yet speak Italian, so I didn't know that carne equina meant equus, meant horse meat. And I used to make my bolognese and meat sauce with ground horse meat. And everyone wondered, did I add sugar to it? Horse meat is kind of sweet. I don't love it. I've eaten it. In Verona, it's called Caval, C-A-V-A-L.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's more the idea, because if we were to be offered, say, in a Chinese restaurant, sweetened beef, we'd eat it very happily, and that's sort of what it tastes like.
Nah.
But I think it's more that, you know, we have associations with different animals, and you know, many Italians eat rabbits, and many people in America would never think of eating rabbits.
So you think if we raised cows here, perhaps we wouldn't like steak as well as we do?
I also went to the University of Wisconsin, where they do raise cows.
Oh, Lord.
And actually, in the Northwest, in the Valle d'Aosta, they do have a cow race every spring. It's called the Battle of the Queens, which sounds funny out of context.
Yeah, they got the same thing in the West Village, but that's a whole different thing on Halloween night.
And at the Opera House. You have to get your seat before the performance.
Absolutely.
Begins.
Now, but I had a steak, and I went with an open. I want to love horse.
Yeah.
I don't care. I want to, and I just can't get there. Now, all right. So we came away from our many stays because we'll go and we'll land and we'll go to Italy, this wine conference at Verona, and then we'll use that as a jumping off point and travel throughout Italy. And we always have better food than we do in Verona. What is the best food city in Italy right now, and what is the worst food city?
What's taken over for Venice as the worst food city?
Florence, absolutely.
It's so beautiful there.
Well, Florence is a beautiful city, but you don't eat the scenery, you eat the food.
Right, but bring a bag lunch?
Right, but
why?
Part of the problem is that Florence has now become so completely dominated by tourism, number one. And number two, I know everybody loves Tuscany for everything, and I love Tuscany for most things. I'm writing a biography now of Michelangelo, so I spent a lot of time there. But the cuisine was never as evolved or interesting as other parts of Italy. They have magnificent wine. They make excellent pecorino cheese, and that's it.
So,
Tuscan food is, I often call it burnt meat and baby food. They have immense amounts of hunks of meat that are grilled, and that's tasty for what it is, with good red wine. And the baby food part is that they like mushy vegetables. And pasta is not very interesting in Tuscany. And the olive oil to me is too dense, too peppery. I prefer Ligurian oil, absolutely. So let's go to Tuscany for other reasons, like the art and the wonderful people. I love the Tuscans.
By the way, if any of them are listening to this show, they're not liking you right now.
Well, no, they know my opinion. I've written about this. They're very irreverent. I really love the Tuscans as a people. They're among my favorites. But the food is, you know, it's tasty because it's Italy. But you ask me where the great food is. Well, Friuli Venezia Giulia, that's the northeast, not far from Venice, is an incredibly sophisticated cuisine, but they don't aim to be sophisticated, it just is. This is the region that uses more spices than any other. Most of Italy uses herbs. But here you'll find ginger and cinnamon and nutmeg with meat and all kinds of different spices, and they have fantastic wines there, red and white. And the wines are designed to perfectly match with different spice flavors. So you might have a local Sauvignon Blanc with saffron that might be used with eggs or with shrimp. Everything works together, so that's great.
People don't think of, in America, I think people, you know, with this Italian restaurant in Jersey, you know, when we're a little bit behind Manhattan,
mm-hmm.
we have we've expanded our Italian wine selection. And one of the areas where I put a lot of this, our sommelier John and I have put a lot of effort into, is in expanding the white wine selections from Italy. And a lion's share of them comes from Friuli.
Yes.
And it's amazing how those white wines there are so great and so different from the big, heavy, oaky Chardonnays that we have here.
Well, the reason we have heavy, oaky Chardonnays in America is because California, wonderful place, is a lot hotter than northeastern mm-hmm. Italy, and therefore the grapes achieve much more sugar as they grow, and that sugar, when the grapes are crushed and vinified, turns into alcohol.
And I'll put it out there as well that what's going on in America and the New World is very exciting with wine. It's almost like our wine in the New World is growing up without regard to any specific cuisine or really food at all. Whereas in Italy, you know, wine is food. In
right,
North
and
Europe,
I tell people all the time the best way to match wine and food is to look at what the people from the place that the food that you're eating, what do they drink?
We're gonna pick it up right there when we come back with Fred Plotkin in just a moment, talking about Italy and what you can find in Italy and what you can find Italian that's worth looking at in America. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And our guest today is Fred Plotkin. He's an expert on Italian food, wine, and opera. We were talking about, Fred, before the break, one of your favorite places to visit for Italy. Now you say is in the region of Friuli.
Friuli Venezia Giulia, that's the whole name.
What city do I go and look to book a stay in?
Okay. The capital is Trieste, a fantastic city. Udine is the second largest city, a very interesting, charming city. But if you want to go just to eat and not do other things, there's a little town called Cormone, C-O-R-M-O-N-S, that has two restaurants, Al Giardinetto and La Subita, both in Italy for the gourmet traveler, that are so spectacular that I would just spend 5 days there eating, having dinner in one and lunch in the other.
Now, are these
elegant
places?
Just go back and forth?
Staggering through the vineyards.
Are these elegant places or casual?
In their quiet way, Our Giardinetto makes a little more of an attempt at elegance, but in a very low-key way, which is to say that you don't have to wear coat and tie, but on the other hand, I wouldn't go in jeans because the way we dress when we go eat communicates to the owner our seriousness as diners. Italy, you sort of just want to wear a nice shirt, open collar, buttons that open so that your stomach fills.
But can I tell you something else that you actually touched on this in two different ways?
Yeah.
All of my friends in Europe, I was in Austria near the Italian border, motorcycling with a friend of mine in August, and I was in France recently in Spain. And what all of my friends over there, they say, you know how you can tell an American? They say, what is it with the flexible waistbands? Wear a belt. Wear pants with a belt. And I thought that was, you know how, like, when maitre d's look at people, they're like, there's enough with the sweatpants or the expense. Just wear a belt. Wear a little bit nice is all we need.
My Italian friends always say that the Americans look like they've arrived to mow the lawn.
So, you know, you can wear jeans, just make them nice jeans, and nothing with an expandable waistband when you're over there.
Correct.
You'll fit in fine. Now, if we don't have airfare and we want to get a little bit of a flavor of Italy and we live, say, around New York City, where can we go? Can you have an Italian restaurant in New York City? Is it possible?
No, and we're talking about Italian restaurants, not Italian-American.
I know what you're saying. The way I do it, and I know I'm a bit privileged and I don't pretend not to be, is if I'm in the mood for a particular dish, I might decide that restaurant A or restaurant B does a good example of, say, risotto or tortellini or veal milanese or something like that. And I first think, what do I want to eat? And then I go to the place that produces a good example of it. But across the board, it's very difficult because let's start with, for example, butter. We have great butter in the United States, but it tastes different from butter in Italy. And I was a consultant a couple of years ago to what's now a very well-regarded Italian restaurant in New York City, and I made them buy butter from Italy, not because it's better, but it tastes like Italian food when you melt a little butter and combine it with the pasta.
Right.
And as much as possible to bring ingredients over from Italy. In that regard, though, now that the dollar is so weak, these ingredients are very, very expensive. So I understand why sometimes a restaurateur, just to stay open, might say, well, I'm sorry, but I'm going to use American butter. So there are these sacrifices that are done. I would frankly encourage people, when they're not going out to eat, to learn to cook more at home. It saves money for them so that then when they do want to go out to eat, they can permit themselves budget-wise to go out to eat.
To go to the best
places. I cook at home 5 or 6 nights a week.
Fred, can we come over?
Sure.
You know, Fred, what you touch on ingredients, but one of the things that I think is the most important ingredient for any culture's cuisine is the water that you use.
Absolutely.
And the water is different from place to place to place to place, and that's what makes a huge differences in the food that we make.
Well, even in Italy, there are vast differences in the water from region to region. And the Neapolitans will tell you that the reason their pasta, their coffee tastes so good is because of the water. Now, I frankly don't quite agree with that. I think it's other reasons. But they see the water as being that. Parma has fantastic water.
Well, I also think that what's interesting is that when you go to these Italian restaurants in Italy, you almost can't have the same thing here. You can only have things inspired. The best Italian chef who tries to do what a great Italian restaurant does is they use local ingredients as well. And so I think when you're here, your choice is to use those techniques and use that sense of hospitality and use that experience, but to use local ingredients, and the food is then going to be different. I mean,
I agree, but for example, water, obviously, you can't transport water. You would not environmentally want to do that because think of the gasoline that it costs to transport water. That's crazy. But olive oil, perhaps butter, certainly Parmigiano-Reggiano cheese. There are certain ingredients, pasta from Italy, that really cannot be replaced by our equivalents.
Well, and also when you get a Jersey tomato at the height of the season, it does not taste like a San Marzano tomato from Italy at the height of the season, but I'd rather have the fresh Jersey tomato or the fresh tomato grown in Jersey, even though we grow San Marzanos here in New Jersey.
Absolutely.
Then have one shipped from across the ocean. And it's an interesting paradigm, but I think it gives room for a creative cook to, take the lessons and make a good and positive thing.
Well, I use Italian tomatoes for sauce, mm-hmm. as most Italians do, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
They use it from a can. And I get peeled tomatoes, pilati. And they do taste of Naples, but obviously for salads, for baking, I'll only use local tomatoes here.
We'll come back in just a moment and talk a little bit more with Fred Plotkin about Italy, on the subject on which he is quite an expert. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. We're talking today with Fred Plotkin, expert on all things Italian. Now, Fred, I want to ask you, I know you split your time between New York and the Italian Riviera. In New York, there's a restaurant that I think does things differently than any New York restaurant has done before. I was very impressed by it, and I'd love to get your take on it. What do you think of Del Posto, Mario Batali's place?
I just ate there last week, in fact. And I should say, in disclosure, that Mario and Lydia Bastianich are very good friends of mine, so that when I comment on the restaurant, let's bear that in mind, too. But even if they weren't, I had the most magnificent roasted pork last week.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of stunning how good that was. Because that's a matter of you have to know the farmer, mm-hmm. buy the right pig, see that it's slaughtered in a humane way, but also so it's not tense so it doesn't affect the muscles. And
right.
The
humane makes good meat, okay?
Absolutely.
That's definitely part of it.
Absolutely.
Well, and also, I just think that place is a unique oasis, a very unique space, a very unique feel, very
unique
style of service
for
New York City.
I had the Bolito Misto there, and it was the best I've ever had.
I think it ranks pretty highly up there. And in the spirit of full disclosure, we went to college with Mario, so that's,
okay.
You went to Rutgers. He's a Rutgers boy.
And you survived.
barely. Fred, I want to thank you for taking the time for talking with us about Italy. Your insight is amazing, and we'll link to your book, Italy for the Gourmet Traveler.
It's been terrific, Fred.
On
please,
our website.
Please come back.
Thank you. I'd love to.
Excellent. That's Fred Plotkin. You can find out about his book, The Update. You can probably pre-order it at Amazon.com. Go and find out about it at RestaurantGuysRadio.com. And you can look for his stuff. Appears in the New York Times all the time. He writes for a lot of food publications, and he's a really insightful and serious writer. So, big fan.
Really terrific.
Thanks.
When we come back next week, we're going to be talking a little bit more about Italy and Italian wines in general. We hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I am Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.